This is not random. I believe China is systematically testing Western pricing infrastructure with the ultimate objective of freeing gold and silver pricing from US dominance. This is mutual escalation. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, unfortunately.
Welcome to the Morning Markets and Metals with Vince Lancey, where each morning Vince brings you the financial and precious metals news to get you ready for your day. And now, here's Vince.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Vince Lancey, and this is the Gold Fix Market Rundown. We're going to talk about something called Metal Wars. Yesterday, I laid out what we believe was in part going on with regard to the Black Friday CME shutdown. Today, I want to clarify something that's often misunderstood about eligible versus registered metal with regard to their availability for delivery, because there are important nuances that need to be made clear. In doing so, I hope to reveal the larger problem with Western exchanges and the emerging crisis in precious metals, the metals war, so to speak. What started in London, as predicted in this space about a year ago, has now migrated to the US. Let's begin. Eligible metal is metal that meets COMEX specifications. It qualifies for delivery, but it is not available for immediate delivery. Registered metal is metal that is currently available for immediate delivery against a futures contract. Now, it's true that you wouldn't typically store metal in a COMEX vault unless you might want to sell it eventually. But vaults also serve as long-term storage facilities. A great deal of metal sits there permanently without being on offer at any given moment. So the distinction matters. Registered equals on the table for sale. Eligible equals off the table unless it is converted to registered. Now, before I go on, it is necessary for a moment to revisit the 2021 correspondence from CME Group, COMEX's parent company, to the CFTC. The letter stated that reported, quote, eligible silver inventories should be discounted by 50% because housed in CME-approved warehouses, these holdings, although despite that being housed there, maintained no functional linkage to deliverable supply within the actual market structure. We will include that PDF in this report when it comes out. Now, I was paraphrasing, by the way, big hat tip to an analyst, Cyril Joubert, in a post on goldbroker.com. Thank you for having that link for me. Now, back to our main line here. Converting metals from eligible to registered is not difficult. The process itself is simple, but the structure exists for an important reason. As was explained to me years ago, eligible storage costs are lower than exchange registered storage because registered metal must remain immediately available for delivery. It's a higher priority parking spot, so to speak, and that costs more. That makes sense. If nobody is buying your metal, you leave it in the eligible status. When a buyer appears, you shift the metal to registered status so it can be delivered. The system is designed to encourage use of the vaults while protecting the delivery mechanism. There are many long-term holders whose metal simply sits as eligible inventory. It meets all the specifications, but it cannot be purchased unless it becomes registered. That metal may be sitting idle, being leased, possibly to bullion banks, ETFs, or industrial users, rotated back and forth as leases expire or fulfillments conclude. But it is not available for delivery unless it is formally registered. Now, this feeds into a critical safeguard for the system. I've referred before to the phrase throwing a sheet over the metal. I learned this during the 1994 to 1997 period when Philip Brothers was executing George Soros in 1994 and Warren Buffett's silver squeeze trades. That was when I received my education on the eligible registered distinction. Now, at one point I was told, quote, look at this, 36 million ounces just moved from registered back to eligible. That was a number that came up back then. I asked what that meant. The answer was instructive. It could be bullish because less metal was being offered for sale. It could be bearish because it could indicate that a buyer had backed out and the metal was returned to eligible status. You can't tell immediately whether it is bullish or bearish when metal moves between these two categories. But what those shifts do communicate is market structure stress. Price action combined with inventory movements signals pressure in the system. Back in those days, Philip Brothers sometimes moved metal deliberately to create the appearance of scarcity. They would throw a sheet over it, meaning they would transfer registered metal into eligible status to suggest tightening supply while the physical metal remained available. They played that game repeatedly before eventually actually taking delivery. It was a sophisticated form of spoofing, exploiting perception rather than reality. What happened on Black Friday? I bring all this up because I believe what happened on Black Friday was a coordinated operation, likely between actors in China and the United States. 6 months ago, we said here that I believe China was already operating inside the U.S. market structure based on my flow analysis. Individuals like Cheng Tang, sometimes referred to as the new Hunt brother, took delivery of gold, very likely from JP Morgan vaults. I cannot prove the specific counterparties, but I do know metal was withdrawn and sent east in, I believe, October of 2023. China has been accumulating massive amounts of precious metals for years. That scale exceeds what could plausibly be explained by solar production or domestic industrial use, particularly now that global trade restrictions have curtailed Chinese solar exports. India is also accumulating aggressively, and we all have ideas where that metal is ultimately heading. But the technical issue is this. What occurred Friday looked like a classic spoof using delivery mechanics to us. Rehypothecation cuts both ways. If actors coordinate purchases across multiple jurisdictions and simultaneously stand for massive delivery, what they are doing is not routine market participation. They are engineering stress inside the settlement system. I've heard from veteran market participants that similar versions of this occurred back in early 2024 as markets started lifting. My own recon aligns with that. As recently as this year, about mid-year, when I think 50,000 contracts were stood for delivery and then mysteriously were unstood for delivery. But here's the key difference in terms of spoofing and rehypothecation. When China buys metal and stands for delivery, that is not manipulation. They are paying for the metal. They are not placing fake trades and canceling. They are testing the physical delivery capacity of COMEX itself. Normally, if I wanted a huge amount of metal, I would coordinate quietly with vault operators and counterparties rather than slam the exchange with a single massive order. You avoid destabilizing the market that way. You allow the system to function smoothly. But if your intent is to stress test the exchange, you do exactly the opposite. You submit a giant order for immediate delivery. I believe we saw something similar previously in gold, as I mentioned. This is not random. I believe China is systematically testing Western pricing infrastructure with the ultimate objective of freeing gold and silver pricing from U.S. dominance. This is mutual escalation. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, unfortunately. Now we get into the metals wars strategic concept. Before China ever started demanding delivery from Western vaults, they ran their own stress tests domestically in 2023. At one point, gold withdrawals from Shanghai occurred at extremely high rates. Officially, it was framed as, quote, bank demand, but Chinese banks are state instruments. Those tests were conducted deliberately, we believe, as China was preparing to open its market structures internationally, which it has done since then. They studied historical operations carefully. China is a student of history. They know exactly what Philip Brothers did in the 90s. They know how oil inventories can be manipulated as first notice day comes. And they happen frequently, month after month. They learned the playbook. That knowledge is now being used. To what ends? Well, this is not just a trade war anymore. This is a metals war. Trade wars, critical mineral wars, pricing power wars. They don't just want the gold. They don't just want the silver. They want control of the price. They want pricing authority. Do they have legitimate motives for this? Absolutely. I believe their long-term strategy involves, one, tokenized gold and silver, two, sovereign stablecoins backed or offering precious metals, three, using metals as repo collateral in HQLA fashion in the sovereign vault network, and four, finally, competing directly with U.S. Treasuries and the dollar system. And I believe the United States understands this and is preparing a response, I hope anyway. Stablecoins will play a role. Gold will play a role and silver will play a role in whatever our response is, whether it be gold-backed bonds or some version of monetization of the gold. Do I think buying 36 million ounces in one day was good faith market behavior, referring back to Black Friday? No, I don't. This is exactly why eligible versus registered inventory categories exist. They are a fail-safe protection to protect settlement from delivery spoofing. Here's the danger, though, and here's the concern that I think our leaders should be aware of, that they should have right now. When COMEX allows actors to declare massive delivery only to reverse at the last moment, business cannot function normally. The vulnerability is exposed. Mind you, we can't stop restricting metal. That's worse. It is the frailty of Western exchange systems being exposed by foreign actors using our own rules against us. The structure itself is being tested in real time. That is the reality. We're talking about institutional failure here, just like in London. The system lacks experienced financial market leadership. You cannot fight this kind of battle with junior algorithm-only desk operations. The problem at the LBMA was not caused by shortages of metal. It was caused by risk management failures and intellectual capital gaps and inept bureaucratic functions. The LBMA itself is a hole in the middle of a donut. It's nothing but its members, and its members didn't give a shit. Or they populated their desks with immature traders. The veteran traders and mentors are gone. The desks are staffed by underexperienced personnel following automated models without deep physical market comprehension. Or worse, I don't want to think of worse. Markets are not purely digital constructs. They involve real metal, real logistics, and real settlement risk. We have a skilled labor gap in manufacturing, as been going around recently in the press. We also now have an intellectual capital gap running our financial markets. Institutions have surrendered judgment to automation. And that institutional complacency has overrun stable market management. So proceed carefully. China is testing our franchise's viability. And the moment we restrict access to physical metal, their exchanges will become the default global store of value. And with that, yet another leg of the US dollar as global reserve currency will collapse. It might be time to clean house in metals. Thank you. Let's do the markets now. 10-year yields are up 2, almost 3. The dollar is flat, offered. The S&P 500 is up 4 handles. The NASDAQ is up 15. The VIX is unchanged, offered. Gold is down 11 bucks and change at 41.90. Silver is down over $1.10 at 57.39. The copper market, 5.25, down 3 cents. WTI, 59.40, up 23. Natural gas, unchanged at 4.79. The drive for 5. Bitcoin, stable. Well off its lows, but in the middle of a range now, down 300 points. Ethereum down 11, Palladium down 8, Platinum down 29, gold, silver up 1. Soybeans, corn, and wheat up, down, and down. How's that? There's the front page. We're going to be talking about these stories. UBS sees 65 silver upside in 2026, and India to use sovereign stablecoins to advance de-dollarization. UBS sees 65 silver upside in 2026. They say silver's pause near $50 just a couple of days ago is just consolidation before a leg higher. They're now targeting $60 in 2026 with a possible overshoot to 65. That's an average price of 60 2026, not a top. The strong investment and industrial demand, tight supply, and gold advance all support their bullish case. UBS recommends staying long and buying pullbacks. That continues in the premium post. UBS sees 65 silver upside in 2026. Next, news item. India to use sovereign stablecoins to advance de-dollarization. India plans a sovereign debt-backed stablecoin to retain domestic liquidity, lowering borrowing costs, and advance de-dollarization through regulatory clarity, though regulatory clarity remains the critical hurdle to success. The knock-on to this is India already has gold bonds. India is going to put their own currency in a stablecoin, which is like a central bank digital currency, in order to protect, to ring fence their domestic capital. Flight of capital is important now. And so if the US uses a stablecoin, it's going to potentially undermine other sovereign currencies. Everyone knows this. And so a stablecoin allows India to possibly keep their own capital in place. Now, if they already use gold bonds and they've tried to convert people's gold wealth to financialization that way, well, what do you think is going to happen next? Why do you think they have bought all that silver? India is going to use sovereign stablecoins to encourage retail buying silver and gold. And I personally believe the Middle East is going to do that as well. I believe, with the assistance of a friend, I believe that when the Saudi Arabians bought SLV, that other Middle Eastern central banks were as well. I believe if you can find a nation in the Middle East that is a tax domicile, that has low tax or no tax, I believe you're going to start finding stable coins backed by precious metals launched from there. And I believe silver will be one of them. So, what city in what country in the Middle East fits that qualification, has precious metals, is deep in the understanding of blockchain, has a lot of money, and is a tax status? You can do the math. India to use sovereign stablecoins is the name of that. Moving on. Bear with me. News and analysis. We just sent this out. Founders, steady as she goes. That's a first look. We'll get into what that is in a second. Goldfix PM as well. Barrett considers IPO of U.S. assets yesterday. Uh-oh, it's time for a new computer. Coming soon, this weekend, Goldman Sachs cross-asset gold survey. Interesting compendium of opinions around the firm that we read in a Zero Hedge post, and we're going to break it down and give our own analysis of it. We think it's a precursor to their end-of-year report. They do not raise their target, which is dangerous, but we have to wait for their end-of-year. Second, J.P. Morgan's 2026 outlook for gold was out last week, silver, platinum, and palladium. We are going to break that down in detail. It's a monster report. We're only going to do the precious metals part. There's base metals in there as well. Maybe we'll throw some copper in. And then Hartnett's 2026 preview, something that he did before he went on vacation, I believe, is out. And we're going to break that down again. These are all for the weekend. So subscribers, stay alert. In the chat yesterday, we dropped some content for people that were around. Technical analysis, Elliott Wave, one of my favorites. One of my favorite technical analysis topics. And we dropped some other charts that I think are of interest to everyone. Hope everyone's having a good time in there. Data on deck. What's today? Thursday? Trade deficit today. Okay. So charts and final market check. I'd just like to spend going back to the very first topic. If there is a metals war, and there is, if there is a trade war and a currency war and a physical mercantile protection of resources, if you will, and there's a global sovereign war financially being executed by proxies like exchanges, well, in the trading, it manifests in trading in the classic strong hands to weak hands concept, which is something that I talk about a lot here. When markets hit a top, you get strong hands to weak hands. When markets hit a bottom, you get strong hands to weak hands. And strong hands to weak hands is an expression describing the smart money's getting in, the dumb money's getting out. The question is, who's smart and who's dumb, right? So I say that because it frequently manifests with wild ranges. And we are seeing wild ranges now. And so I'm talking about silver specifically. And the reason that's relevant is because if there is a back and forth war and gold and silver are in play as China is buying, potentially spoofing to make a point, and the U.S. is defending but not doing really what needs to be done and letting their bullion banks, you know, adrift in the sea do what they have to do with an occasional, you know, cap of the rally by the BIS. Well, someone is the strong hand and someone is the weak hand. And if the weak hand is the U.S., we're going to have the gold pool scheme. It's going to base, stop, and explode one day overnight, and we will lose. If China is the weak end, well, then their economy is going to collapse and they're going to be forced to sell. It's a serious war going on right now. We are in the middle of strong hands to weak hands. And I cannot emphasize this enough. Know what you're going to do if the market moves 5% one way or the other. Know it before it happens, because it could happen any day now. Anyway, I'm Vince. Have a great day.
Well, thank you, Vincent, as always, for this morning's report in another wild, exciting, and volatile week in the gold and silver markets. But hopefully, Vince's recap of the mercantilism that's taking place out there has helped make it a little easier to follow what's going along and perhaps more importantly, be prepared for the things that are happening, of which certainly our old sensei has guided us. And it's interesting seeing many of the things he's talked about the past couple of years happening now. So just hope you're doing well out there. Appreciate you being here. And before we wrap up, I'd also just like to thank Dolly Varden Silver, one of the proud sponsors to the Arcade Economics Show that helps bring this show to you each morning. And obviously, we've had Sean Kunkin, the CEO of Dolly Varden, on the show a couple of times, and he's talked about how they've been increasing their access to their overall ounces of silver through a series of acquisitions and aggressive drilling. And the last time I talked with him, he actually talked about what the target is and how he's going about getting there. And let's play a clip of that now.
And so when I put out the goal of 400 million ounces, it's not necessary to be relevant, but I do think it does demonstrate the geological potential of this district. And I think when a mining company is looking to get into an area, like we've got Newmont up in the neighborhood operating two mines, I think when a company like Newmont sets up shop in an area, they want to be there for decades, right? They want to see, you know, a 20, a 30 year mine life. They want to see big numbers in order for, as these companies grow, you know, Agnico Eagle's now a $120 billion company. As these companies grow, in order to move their needle, they need to see big numbers of production. And I think having a 400 million ounce silver EQ project would make us attractive to even the biggest silver miners in the world.
Well, thank you, Sean, and thank you, Vince, and thank you at home for watching. Sure hope you enjoyed the show. And to find out a little bit more about the latest from Dolly Varden and Sean Kunkin, well, that video is coming your way now.